Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I am your host, Casey Grant, and as I always say before my shows, this is going to be another enlightening and interesting interview. Today my guest is Bill Lucy, who is a civil rights activist, labor activist, and union leader. And most importantly, he is my friend. Bill is co-founder of Coalition of the Black Trade Unionists, the CBTU, which ensured African Americans a voice in labor, and in 1984 joined Free South Africa Movement, which was a grassroots campaign that sparked widespread opposition to apartheid in South Africa. He was also involved in the release of Mandela. Bill also was instrumental, which is really interesting to me, the rally cry for the sanitation workers' strike in Memphis, I am a man. And Bill, as I said to you earlier, I saw that on a building that I have gone past in this area for many days and never noticed it. But Bill is very active still in politics and in the movement, which is why he is on the show today. We just want to get a little insight from him as to where we are going, what's happening. This race is so close that my nerves are just tattered, but hopefully Bill can kind of soothe my nerves and soothe your nerves and give us some insight as to what is happening in the world. So with that, I would like to introduce my dear friend, William Lucy. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Casey. Good morning, and thanks so much for having me on your show.
Oh, I am so excited. I can't stand it. And even though we are the best of friends, it's like I'm nervous. I'm interviewing you. But this is going to be so much fun and easy going. I just kind of like to, just get a handle on where we are. This election is just so tight. And I'm doing everything to try to calm my nerves down. I've walked around my apartment and I've done exercises. And I am just really frazzled. But one of the things that you and I had talked about when I was asking you some questions, and with it being a baffling thing to me, is that the count is so close. And as you said, which is so baffling, is how can people vote against their own interests and well-being? And some of the things that we're discussing and we're so perplexed about, it's like the pandemic and how it has been mishandled, unemployment, health insurance, and these are all things that affect us so, and we know how one person feels about it, and we know what the other person, their stand on it, what they would do to help us. This is just baffling to me that the race could be so close. Can you give me some of your insight about what I've said? And calm me down, Bill. Please just calm me down.
I don't have any well-educated insights, but I've come to learn Donald Trump. And what Trump has been able to do, and we've seen it over the last 4 years, is convince a substantial number of people that if they just eat and feed off of a little racism and recognize that they're a little better off than somebody else, they would be happy with that. And what he's managed to do is to convince an awful lot of people that they have a grievance against society. They've got problems in their own social standing. They've got an aggravation that he becomes the voice of interpreting to the people as a whole. And he has convinced them that he is the leader of a group such as that, and he voices their frustration. Four years ago, when he was elected, I said to an awful lot of people that I didn't believe that everybody who voted for Trump was a racist. I didn't believe that. But I did believe that every racist who voted for Trump. Well, yeah. Now we've got a different situation because 4 years later, everybody who voted for Trump knew who they were voting for. And they did so fully recognizing that in so many cases it was against their own vested interests, but they were happy to be a part of a broad cult of racist focused individuals, and they did so happily. And I think for those of us on the activist side, or people who believe in fairness and openness and honesty, there's an incredible frustration. But as you said earlier, I mean, the numbers appear to be going in the right direction now with regard to the presidential election. Just a bit ago, I saw that Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, whatever is outstanding appeared to be trending towards Biden.
Okay.
And in that, assuming that he would be the victor in the elections, that gives us some satisfaction that we've been able to achieve a small victory. Although the Trumpites are not gone, and Trumpism is not gone, and we still got the fight to make. But I think, Case, that what comes out of this frustration is our belief in what we have historically been taught, that certain fundamental things, that if people see them and recognize them to be wrong, that they will do the right thing. But here they voted for a guy who, in effect, covered up the COVID. I mean, it wasn't like he didn't know it. He simply just put out a bad story. And in effect, 225 or 30,000 people have died as a result of his mismanagement of a major situation.
Exactly.
A critical issue in this election. You know, we think of the absence of empathy for 140 million poor and low wealth people who are trying to survive in an economy who he applauds, but have no recognition of the fact that it creates an incredible splotch on the lives of just millions and millions of people. So we're frustrated by the fact that enough people in our political system chose to turn a blind eye to the problems of millions of people in exchange for feeling a little bit better about their own individual and personal racism.
And that's the thing, and you're absolutely right. You've said it. It is so frustrating, and it has affected friendships. And, you know, you look at people and you go, how can you why would you go and vote for a person with the point of views that he displays, or the lack of sympathy and empathy for people? How do you do that? And you just take a second look at people that you thought were friends, which I don't know what we're going to do after this. Are you going to just drop them as your friend because you see that they're not understanding what we stand for, and you do understand what they stand for? I'm just so stressed out about the situation and the realization of what is happening to us.
Well, I think the situation we are confronted with, it really makes the argument that we've simply got to fight harder to try and build a society that rejects any of the things that motivate him and others like him. I mean, we're not a society that would tolerate children being put in cages. That's simply, we're better
and separated
people
from
than
their
that.
Parents. Yeah.
To suggest that we drop out of the game means we accept that kind of a piece of social policy. And I think we're just not fundamentally in a position to accept that, and we've got to continue to fight on. But beyond that, we've got millions and millions of people who will have their health care taken away simply by the evilness of trying to wipe out the Affordable Care Act. And some people argue, well, I'm better off than that. Well, you're better off than that if you've got a meaningful job with a decent wage that can allow you to buy health care. The millions and millions of people who can't afford it really have access to it now as a result of President Obama and Vice President Biden's passage of the Affordable Care Act. And we as a society cannot sit on the sidelines and watch them take this away.
Exactly.
We're accustomed to crooks. I apologize for putting it so blunt, but we're accustomed to crooks. But
yes.
Seldom has we had been face to face with just basic corruption, and accept that as the norm, and that's what this president has done to this nation. He's made corruption an active part of the program. And to those of us who really believe that we are part of a much broader struggle to create a fair and more open and honest society, we've still got to stay in the fight.
Yes. Yes, and you're absolutely right. And I love it when you say, yeah, we know there are crooks. We know there's corruption. We know people are out for themselves. We know that people want to pad their, they get in a different certain position and they want to pad their pockets, and it's all about me, me, me. And it's enough to go around for everyone to not be that greedy. But then how do you sit next to someone knowing that you've got so much and they just need a little and you won't even give it to them? And you're right. With so many things that Donald Trump has displayed, and it's just so amazing that we're being forced or introduced to the fact that we are supposed to accept this. And this is not the way it's supposed to be. Whether you believe in God or whomever you believe in, it's still the message of, you know, love your neighbor, be kind to your neighbor, be thoughtful of your neighbor, help your neighbor, and he could care less.
Well, you know, he represents the nation. He is the face of America, but yet he is the worst example of a leader. Franklin
yes.
Roosevelt, many, many years ago, when he was talking about the value of our country and this and the goodness, he raised really a basic question. And he says, how do you measure the greatness of a nation? Do you measure it by what it gives to those who have too little, or what does it give to those who already have too much? And I think that's a good yardstick. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we are a nation of laws and decency, and having a built-in sensitivity to the needs of people less fortunate than ourselves.
Yes.
But here's a guy who is just so despicable. He uses every opportunity to take advantage of every disaster. And
yes.
he himself is a part of a walking disaster.
Yes.
You look at the people around him who are the most dangerous group who enable him to continue doing what he's doing. You look at a guy like Mitch McConnell, who is his hand-in-hand cohort in crime. You look at senators who were elected or will be elected, who know better, whose history is much more committed to decency, but they have drank the Kool-Aid. And it comes right back to our collective responsibility to continue the struggle to make this a better nation.
And you're right. And that's why I've looked at these people, and we've all heard different interviews where they were on one side, now they're behind Trump, and now they're on the other side to the far extreme. And you're right. How do we, or give me some insight as to, we win the presidency that we're projecting. Let's say we win the presidency, and as you say, we won't win or may not win the House, the Senate.
Well, we'll win the House. The House will stay
the
in
House,
good hands. We won't get the Senate.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like those numbers are there. But, the mission is to continue to fight for it, to build broader coalitions,
yes.
and to ultimately elect people who – not necessarily who agree with any of us 100% of the time, but who agree on the basic principle that their mission in life, their job in life, is to pass policies and to formulate policies that give everyone a fighting chance in this society.
A fighting chance, yes.
You know, and what particularly workers, and let me speak to that, all they ask for is a level playing field. I mean, nobody expects anybody to give them a better life. What they expect is to be able to earn a better life using the skills and abilities that they have. Trump comes at it a different way. He says, let us make sure that nobody who is not in the millionaire class is going to have any opportunities to extend themselves by the value of the services they perform.
Mm-hmm.
That's the tragedy of this situation. And
yeah.
you've got folks who just really are two paychecks ahead of poverty themselves, who look
yeah.
down the ladder at people who are struggling, just trying to get a fair shake.
Yes.
And I think that's what's so great about Joe Biden, is that he has a feel for average people who are trying to simply have a fair and decent life based on their contribution to our system.
And that is a sensitive part about him, and that is the reason why we were so, I was, much of a fan when he was with President Obama. But the fact is he can relate. And that's the whole point of it is, we know when people get into these different positions, they may start off for us, and they sometime they may go a little straight off the path. But the point of it is Joe Biden has felt the different issues that we are living through now. Poverty, don't have a job, no Medicare. He believes in what he fights for, and that is why I voted so eagerly to put him in the position to be able to help us. But I don't understand, and I mean, we've already said it before, and I'm going to go back to it, but how do people, as you said, vote against your own well-being and your own interests? How do you vote for somebody that's going, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face? You won't have medical insurance.
I think there's a lot of reasons why folks rationalize what they do. Folks have legitimate concerns about, you know, the right to life questions.
Yes.
And they're entitled to that, but they ought not have the ability to speak to me about my issues as I relate to right to life. I mean, women ought to have a voice and control of their own bodies. I mean, there are so many key things that really motivate people. But I kind of frown when folks want to transfer their fundamental beliefs and force
yes.
it on us. I mean, that's the tragedy. And these are key issues that motivate some folks in terms of how they vote.
May I interrupt you just for a second on that one issue? And because it's one of the things that really has annoyed me about the pro-life. There's a person that I know that says that right off the hand. I believe in Trump because of pro-life. This person has had several abortions many years ago. But now you stand up and want to take the rights away from a woman who's going through a difficult situation, and you don't remember how it felt when you were in that situation? See, that's so hypocritical to me. But then you want to impose your rights on me.
Well, but beyond that, folks who are so seriously pro-life also support the death penalty, which is, seems to me to be an ultimate contradiction.
Definitely.
But I mean, those are their beliefs, and they have in Trump someone who really is, as I used to describe, water. It takes the shape of whatever you pour it into. He has no fundamental beliefs about
mm-hmm.
anything. He will say
mm-hmm.
whatever needs to be said to get out of the particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
He has no core belief, has no core values.
Yeah.
And as a result, we have now had him for 4 years. We're now confronted with, and I assume that Vice President Biden will bring these other places into it, and he will assume the presidency after a little bit of pushing and shoving.
Mm-hmm.
But his role will be to begin to try and unify the country, to try and get consensus around some core values that
yes.
the country stands for and is willing to pursue.
Absolutely.
And with that, I consider, while it's disheartening, that we didn't gain enough control of it to be able to predict the agenda, we will have a different dialogue across the country. We'll have a different dialogue across the world. I mean, the second worst thing that Trump did was destroy our national credibility in the global context.
Absolutely.
And I think that Vice President Harris and President Biden will begin the build back process to regaining the status of our country in the world of nations.
Yes. Yes. And that's the hope that we have. That's the relief. That's the thing that my prayers were, and as I woke up, it gives us the leadership to go in the right direction. And it isn't going to be an easy road for President Biden or Vice President Harris. We know that, the struggle, because the many things that they did to block President Obama, they wouldn't allow him to do so many things that he wanted to do that would have been an improvement or betterment for so many people and their lives. And so this, it's not going to be an easy road, but at least it would be one in the right direction.
Well, the thing that Trump knows, Case, and it goes back to President Obama's time, is that the saving force across this nation is going to be the political power and influence of African-American voters, both male and female.
Mm-hmm.
When Biden takes charge, when he gets through this, as I say, this little pushing and shoving, it'll be black voters who really gave this nation an opportunity to go back to something that resembles normalcy with decency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because had black voters not supported the candidacy of Biden, we would have had Trump running wild among other competitors in this race.
Mm-hmm.
Kamala Harris and Vice President Biden really is sort of the wind beneath the wings of this nation.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about this guy having free reign to do whatever he wants to do unchecked. He says he's going to go to the Supreme Court and ask them to stop the ballot counts. Well, this nation may as well fold up his tent if the Supreme Court stops people from counting votes.
Absolutely.
But whose votes are they counting? They are counting essentially the preponderance of black votes that came out of areas that he absolutely needs in order to sustain himself. So while we may be disappointed, this is not over by a long shot, and it's to the credit of black voters that they have, in effect, saved this nation.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a good point. I hope that more people will reiterate that, because it is the power of the black vote. And for blacks that have gone out, I commend everyone who did take the time to exercise your right, because it's about our lives. It's about our livelihood. It's about us maintaining or trying to get back the semblance of who we are, as you have said. And that was an important vote. So our vote, the black vote, was a very important vote.
Well, it was important for a number of reasons, I think, both to secure low-wage workers, workers who had no job, but who became convinced that the Biden-Harris campaign reflected their aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
And came out to vote in numbers unheard of for a long time. Early voters.
Yes.
So in Biden would not have been in the game to start with had it not been for the power of black voters. Now some folks really take umbrage in that and resent the fact and may even come out and vote against it simply because it's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
The future of this nation is going to be premised on the power of blacks and their participation in both political parties, but predominantly the Democratic Party, for which they believe their fortunes lie. And I think that what we've got to do on an ongoing basis is really prepare our young folks for a whole new and different future.
Yeah.
And they've got to get themselves prepared to understand that this is not going to be kumbaya. They've got to be prepared to take leadership roles on those issues and policies that directly affect our community as a whole and them individually.
And take the interest. See, that's the whole point of it. They're not even looking at it. They're not even being enticed to take the interest or get interested in what's happening. They walk around, and my point of view on other things too, just the black vote. But there's so many mixed children out here now that they don't associate with this or that or the other, and so they have no alliance to who they are. And they need to understand that you may be biracial, but you still are black. And you still have to understand the struggles that we have gone through and what you need to maintain to exercise your rights. And they're not interested. They're not getting it. We need to bring them back into the fold. And you're right. It's very important to do that.
For long range, you raised the question a bit ago, what should we be doing? Well, where we have black legislative leadership, these cities, these counties, and state legislatures, we need to really begin a serious discussion about what our curriculum looks like and what it should look like, our school curriculum. When I graduated from high school, this was back in the Stone Age, but we had to take civics in our 11th and 12th grade in order to graduate. I mean,
absolutely.
And civics prepared us to understand how government works, what was government's role to us, and what our responsibility to the government was. After I was out of school, I mean, they began to take civics out of the classroom. Now, it may be back now, I don't know, but back then they just took it out.
Yeah.
And nobody said a word. They took basketball out, and the whole community went up in arms.
Yeah.
Well, so we've got to get into the discussion and the debate about what our school curriculum looks like so that our kids can be prepared for the world that they're going to live in. I talked to some of my religious friends, and they're great friends. And we live under our faith, but we live under public policy.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to election time, they're not counting prayers, they're counting votes.
Yes.
And we really need to be prepared for that discussion and prepare our young folks for what they're going to be dealing with.
Yes. And you're right. I say the same thing about removing civics out of the curriculum. I don't understand. Well, as you say, we do understand how it happens, but that is the basic. That's where you get your fundamentals from. You don't understand it. I hated civics, but I learned, and it was the basis for things that I have had an opinion about before and now. But they don't have that anymore. They don't even understand. We used to have to take the state constitution. You had to pass that before you could graduate. I don't know if that's still in play or not.
Well, it's been so long since I was in high school. I mean, if you'd have
it
to take ancient history.
It was yesterday, Bill. Come on.
But I think it's just so important that our political leadership and our teachers really make a case for kids getting the fundamentals that they need for today's time.
Yes.
And our teachers who are really have devoted their lives to educating folks. But the politics of who makes the curriculum is an issue that we're not normally engaged in that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got to figure out how. In so many places, cities, as I said, counties and states, where we have political leadership, we got to stop thinking about what kinds of courses makes it easy for folks to graduate. I mean, we should not be graduating based on seniority. We ought to be graduating based on competence and having mastered the courses that we need to compete in an incredibly fast-changing society.
Yes, absolutely. They're not equipped. I mean, this generation is about instant gratification. They go on the Internet and they get the answers without thinking about is it right, is it wrong, or even having the interest in even investigating what you've read. You know, one point of view is not the only thing you should be deciding making your decisions on, and people don't. They don't think anymore. And I think you're right about that. We've let so many things slip through and become so complacent, and then here we are. Here's where we are.
Well, we're going to be confronted with some new challenges no matter who wins this election because we still got generations of kids to prepare for a whole new and different future that's out there. And, everybody's not going to the NBA. Everybody's not going to the NFL.
Yeah.
We've got to help our system prepare our folks for a changing economy and society, and they've got to be prepared to participate in it.
Yeah.
Well, that's our ongoing motion, motivation, and we've got the responsibility to step up to the plate and do what has to be done.
We do. And we have, the, as you said, you know, the fight is not over. It's just like writing my book, The Stars in the Sky, and telling our story about fighting. So I say it's the civil rights in the skies, what we did, breaking the color barrier. But the fact of it is, you know, you write the book, and after the book is it's published, that's when your work really starts, because now you want to get your story out. You want people to know about it. You want to continue to getting in the public libraries, getting interviews, and so on. So your work is just starting after you've published a book. And that's exactly where we are for this. Hopefully, I will trust that we are going to have President Biden and Vice President Harris is going to win. And at the end of the day, we're all going to be, that's going to be signed, sealed, and delivered. But our fight, as you have said many times in different ways, has just started. But at least the leadership has a is a different component. Different, some compassion will be there, because we have to get this pandemic under control. And I mean, that's why I don't understand how it's so close. People are walking around and, well, I won't wear a mask. You won't. We got to get it under control before we can even get back to any type of semblance of being normal.
Well, you absolutely will not have a healthy economy until you get control of this pandemic thing.
Yes.
And we've got to really change the dynamics of how it impacts our society. The Trump crowd, as long as the data suggests that its impact disproportionately is to low income, low wealth
yes.
people, poor people,
yes.
poverty-stricken people, as long as the impact is with them, you know, the Mar-a-Lago crowd is okay.
Yes.
And we've got to figure out not only how to get control of it, but to how to prepare folks for, and this is not the only pandemic that's going to come. We really
yeah.
need to put the value on science and scientists, so that when we're confronted with this, as President Obama did, they prepared a book and left it for this dummy to,
yeah.
to read.
And he threw it away. Yeah. Who knows? It's collecting dust somewhere.
Well, but and that's the tragedy. But he should be, as a matter of fact, I'm prepared to go out on a limb. We should put him on a pedestal and let all other people see him to see what a real dummy looks like.
Yes, and go into the dictionary as this is the definition of a dummy, and have his picture right there in the dictionary. Because it just baffles me. I just don't understand. How we are doing what we are doing. But anyway, so where we are is on pins and needles, trying to find out and wait for the outcome. And as you have said, you know, if I'm just wrapping it up for you, if there's anything else that you think that we really give us hope or some insight on something, please let me know. But at this point, our work is just going to start after we have gotten our president, the one we all think will give us hope and some leadership, once he's in, but the work is not done.
Well, I would say, Case, that we cannot make the same mistake continuously. President Obama was elected. I mean, we really came together as an incredible coalition and elected him. And
yeah.
a lot of us went back home and said, okay, President Obama, you got it.
Yeah.
Elections have consequences. And even as Biden is successful and Ms. Harris, we still got to stay in the game to create the political foundation for the changes we want.
Yeah.
He will not be able to do it by himself, but we ought to be fighting for the broader coalition to achieve the agenda.
Yes. Yes. And that's always, as we always say, you know, we think that voting just for the presidency is it. No, you have to deal with your local voting. You know, you have to pay attention to the judges that are coming in. So, you know, we have to stay on point. We cannot give up now. And the struggle and the stress is just too overbearing for us all to continue like this. I can't continue like this. So
well,
I would be doing my part, anything I can do.
There's a valuable lesson to be learned from this experience, and it is to really value the contribution of young people who put the Black Lives Matter issue front and center to the country, and the country is to be congratulated for responding to it. We've got to not only help those young people see their role in a broader society, using the energy and the commitment that comes from their experiences as Black Lives advocates.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't say I'm not depressed by the situation because it only speaks to what we have to do.
Okay.
And I think we're in good shape.
You heard that sigh. Because what you just said brought comfort to my spirit and my soul. As long as you're not discouraged by it, I'm not going to become discouraged. I'm going to try to be on your side and listen to everything you have said to kind of lift my spirit. But the energizing part of everything is to continue to be involved. And we will continue to be involved, hopefully. Coming from the instructions from Mr. William Lucy, everyone, my audience, you heard what he said. We must continue to be involved. And it isn't going to be an easy road. But I think we've been put on a positive road that we can move forward.
Case, I was saying it was going to be easy. It would have been done already.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Well, I tell you, I'm going to thank you so much. Is there anything that you would like to say that I haven't gotten out of you so far? You've given me my calmness, my stress releases, so I'm hoping that my audience is feeling somewhat relieved but informed. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we end this interview?
No, I would just like to thank you for the opportunity to be on your showcase. It's a real pleasure to be a part of the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm trying. I'm doing my best. I, as little as it may seem to some, it's a big thing for me, but I really appreciate you acknowledging that. And I will say thank you so much. I would allow you now to go and sit in front of the TV like the rest of us and see what's going to happen.
I would.
See what's going to happen.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Lucy. And for my audience, I appreciate you tuning in today. I hope that you learned something new. I know that you were enlightened by our conversation. Mr. Lucy gave us wonderful insight as to what we have to do, where we're going from here. Just keep that in your mind. The battle, the fight is not over. And thank heavens for all that went out and voted, because we exercised our right. It's a very important right. And for the blacks that got up and stood for something and voted, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it, because together we can become better. We will fight for this. We will continue to fight for justice. We will fight for justice for all. So with that, I'm going to say I hope you enjoyed the show. Please tune in again when I am going to bring in another interesting and enlightening person of interest. And once again, this is Casey Grant, and I am the host of the Fly Girl Show. Stay tuned, and I will see you again soon. Have a wonderful day. This is a new day and a new beginning. Thank you.